I'm on the phone with Mark Glady, region agronomist with Winfield. Mark, we're going to be talking about your answer plots. Before we get into that, talk about the area in Minnesota that you work in.
Yeah, so I live in Montevideo, and I cover a large section of central and west central Minnesota, not only helping out with technical training at answer plots for growers in the area, but also for co-op sales agronomists that come to get more in-depth technical training. A lot of them are CCA-certified individuals, and we go through a lot of not only herbicide, insecticide, fungicide, mode of action training. We do a lot of application training as far as what is the right adjuvant for the right situation, the right spray nozzle, and pressure. Answer plots are actually a lot more than just hybrid and variety trials. We do a lot of fertility testing and herbicide testing and various sorts of HIF products.
We'll be talking about corn and soybeans, but are there other crops in your region that you work with? And if so, do you get into that with these answer plots at all?
Right, yep. So, yeah, so corn and soybeans is, of course, the focus, as that is the dominant number of acres in my geography. But at half of the answer plots that I cover, we also have alfalfa trials, where we're looking at Roundup Ready alfalfa, direct seeded versus, you know, a conventional alfalfa that's underseeded with oats or wheat, comparing yield and stand counts and quality. So, yeah, alfalfa is another big one, as well as other forages that we call them our forage blocks. So we think of alfalfa first, but there's certainly different forage sorghums that we plant as well that are potential feed sources and situations. Seems like there's always some spot in my territory that gets a lot of rain. They're really wet. And, you know, if they're still wet now and haven't been able to get in the field, now we're looking at the first week of June to get in, and a grower that's, you know, feeding cattle or milk cows needs, you know, high-quality forage. And if it's getting too late for that grower to want to take the risk of planting a corn silage, the forage sorghums do present a very viable option for a high-quality feed for a dairy grower or a beef producer as well.
You're the answer plot expert, so I'll let you dictate the first area that you think we should discuss when it comes to the research that is done, whether it's corn, soybeans, alfalfa. If you were to prioritize the most important research component of the answer plot, and we'll go from there, where do you think we should begin?
Yeah, so I'm biased because at answer plots, I do the technical training on more of what I call the HIF, the herbicide, insecticide, fungicide, the seed treatments, the micronutrients, starter fertilizers. My counterpart, he handles the actual, just the seed, you know, variety and hybrid trials. So, you know, from a big picture standpoint, the hybrid and variety trials for corn and beans are probably one of the biggest areas that we like to showcase, but that's the one that I don't really talk about the most, and I don't know the actual numbers or data offhand. So I would like to start with more of what's going on agronomically in western Minnesota. I'd like to talk about the problems that showed up last week and how we're addressing those with answer plot data to give growers insights into that.
What are those recent problems?
Okay, so last week we had 33 degrees, and, you know, for cold temps, some places got 32 on Tuesday and Wednesday morning. I know from Belgrade north, there was light frost on, patchy frost on areas of people's decks and patios. But the biggest problem is that beans, starting last Wednesday when guys started getting in their fields, my phone started ringing off the hook about beans that were just at the cracking stage, or their cotyledons, the seed piece, as it was just at the soil level. Hadn't emerged yet, but it was just at the soil level last Saturday when we started getting the rain, Saturday night into Sunday. And we stayed cool, got almost down to freezing, didn't technically freeze in Monty, but very cool for 2-3 days. We're losing 20-30% of our stand, meaning the soybeans are just dying. They're brown and they're dead. And what I'm doing this afternoon is I'm going to walk a couple thousand acres of beans with some co-op sales agronomists, and we're going to evaluate, you know, do we have at least 100,000 plants per acre left? Most guys seed somewhere around 140,000 to 150,000, but we need to make the determination of whether these beans are going to, with the heat and sunlight over the weekend, a little bit of rain to soften the soil up, are those beans going to continue to live and grow, or have they died since last week when they looked pretty damn sick?
It must have been a combination then of the near freezing temperatures and the moisture, not one or the other?
Correct. Those in combination, and the other big kicker is that we've been preaching, talking a lot at answer plots, and the industry in general has talked a lot the last 3 years about the importance of using a pre-emergence herbicide to control water hemp that's glyphosate resistant, as well as common and giant ragweed and other tough to control weeds like lamb's quarters. The problem is when those beans, those cotyledons were right at the surface of the soil, hadn't emerged yet. They were still right at the surface. We got a cold drink of water on Saturday and Sunday. They soaked up a lot of that water along with a lot of that herbicide. The temperature stayed cool for the next 3 to 4 days, close to freezing in the mornings, but very cool even in the daytime. High temps were sometimes only in the 40s. And the soybean plant that just soaked up a lot of that herbicide was not able to metabolize that herbicide or detoxify itself, so to speak, to work that chemical out of its system. And that, you know, the chemical, a big drink of cold water with the herbicide and the cool temps, all three of those together are what we're believing is the cause of killing off a lot of these small soybean plants.
You do the research. So the combination of traits and treatments, is there any way of preventing something like this from occurring down the road? Because it was just terrible timing with terrible weather conditions. Is there anything from a scientific standpoint a producer can do?
Great question. And the fine line we need to walk, or the conversation I'm having with growers now, and you know, growers are thinking, man, I just spent $20 an acre to put on a pre-emergent herbicide because we've been telling you need this for weeds. And that was still, looking back, that was still the right thing to do. Because if we don't have a pre-out and we don't control the water hemp, then we know we're going to have yield loss issues and the weeds are going to go crazy. So as terrible as it is to see that, you know, the herbicide might have been part of this problem, not solely by itself, but with the environment, that was a big piece of, it was a piece of the puzzle. That's potentially a problem. But you look at what you could do, and from our answer plot data and research, what my next biggest concern is, well, the first concern is I'm walking fields this afternoon, and I strongly encourage all growers to get out and count your stands. Make sure you got at least about 100,000 plants per acre of soybeans is the break point or the cutoff, where if I have 100,000 or more plants, I've probably got enough plants out there to get close to optimizing my yield, and that does not justify replanting more. But if I've got less than 100,000 or certainly less than 90,000 plants per acre, that's when I want to consider thickening up the stand with, you know, going in and seeding more beans into the existing stand. Usually I recommend growers go kind of plant at an angle to the current rows to just thicken them up in places. But to get to your original question, what can you do? What does our answer plot data tell you? One of the other recommendations we strongly make in this in the Northern Corn Belt for planting soybeans is to use a seed treatment, a fungicidal, insecticidal seed treatment, because you know, I mentioned there's a 20 to 30% stand loss from the weather events we've had and the herbicide, potential herbicide injury. Now we've got soybeans that are, they're maybe a little burnt or a little dinged up, but they're kind of sickly. They're not a strong, healthy bean. And I'm glad we're getting some heat and sunlight to get these beans growing again. But sick, weakly beans like that are more susceptible to being taken over by a fungus. Which now that we've got the moisture and some warm temps, this fungus and the disease in the soil is going to get working hard. And if guys don't, if they did not treat their beans, those beans are going to be much more susceptible to potentially dying off because they're already weakened from the environment and potential herbicide interaction.
Have you found a, I hate to say magic number, but when you look at planting populations with soybeans, the research that you've done again at the, with these answer plots, what's that magic number, if you will, Mark?
Yep, so we strongly feel even, we've got trials with 30-inch rows and 20-inch rows, and if you have 140,000 final plant stand, we feel pretty comfortable saying that's enough to optimize your yield. And when I mentioned keeping stands that still have 100,000 plants, that's not quite going to reach your optimum yield. It's a couple percent less, but it's still acceptable, worth leaving. But I think most, and our answer plot data is consistent with a lot of university trials in the area where there's certainly, I shouldn't say certainly, there's always, you know, conditions or situations, fields that are unique, but the vast majority of our fields in western Minnesota do not need to be seeded at 170 or 180,000 plants per acre. You know, that 140 to 160,000, I would say, is still the norm in my geography from the customers I work with, but the main thing is to have a final stand of 140,000 plants per acre should be enough to optimize your yield.
Unfortunately, it sure sounds like at least some of the producers you work with are going to have to replant. And I guess the silver lining to that would be we're still in May.
Correct. Yep. Yield potential, we're still in May. Yield potential is still strong for soybeans. I looked at the numbers on some university data, U of M, University of Minnesota, planting dates earlier this morning. and a late May planting date, it still gets you somewhere in that 96 to 97% of an optimum yield or of yield that had the beans been planted on, you know, May 5th. So that's absolutely the bright spot. It's late May, not late June.
Let's talk about battling those weeds some more and whether the grower was able to get a pre-emerge on or not. The pre-emerge caused some problems because of the weather conditions. And in other cases, the weather kept farmers from getting a pre-emerge on. And so now you have soybeans that have emerged and they've missed their window. So how are you navigating them through to the next step if they've missed that opportunity?
Exactly. And this is, and we know this happens. We understand logistically it's extremely difficult for growers to get all their beans planted and sprayed within, you know, most of the pre-emerge herbicide labels require the herbicide to be applied within 3 days of when the soybeans are planted. A lot of bigger planters out there nowadays, when growers can seed 400, 500, 600, maybe even 700 acres of soybeans in a day if they had to, it makes it very hard to keep up spraying, or makes it very hard on a retail co-op to with the custom application to get all those acres sprayed as well. But to answer your question, if a soybean field was planted, does not have a pre-emerge herbicide on now, the lambs quarters are starting to come. It won't be long for the water hemp to start poking through once our soils warm up a little more. The best thing we can do is to treat weeds, spray weeds with, you know, post-emergence herbicides that are labeled to control our tough-to-kill glyphosate-resistant weeds like water hemp and ragweed. Okay, so there's several herbicides out there. You know, pick your flavor, but the most important advice I can give you is, one, make sure we're spraying these weeds when they're 4 inches or less, and I'm not going to yell at you if you spray them at 2 inches, because the smaller they are, the easier they are to control. You know, I find it fascinating in my travels or experiences that we talk a lot about, you know, water hemp and glyphosate-resistant water hemp, which we certainly have, but I believe there's a gray area between being truly glyphosate resistant versus highly glyphosate tolerant. Okay, resistance versus tolerant. You can have a tolerant water hemp that if it gets up to 6 or 8 inches tall, we probably can't kill it with Roundup or other tank mix partners. But if you can spray that water hemp at 2 inches, and we saw this a lot last year, a lot of guys went out really early at 2-inch water hemp or less, 1-inch water hemp, and did a very good job controlling them with glyphosate and a tank mix partner. So we can still kill them if we get them small. That'd be my first recommendation. My second piece of advice, and this is one I stress a lot at Answer Plots, is you have to use the right adjuvants to get those herbicides to work. A lot of times, just going out and spraying the herbicide isn't enough. Because if we're spraying post-emergence herbicides, you know, more than likely we're using water as our carrier. When individual spray droplets, water-based spray droplets, land on a plant's leaf, a water hemp leaf or a lamb's quarter leaf, whatever we're spraying, all plant leaves have wax in them. Wax is an oil, and that waxy, oily substance on the leaves is how plants, you know, keep moisture inside of them. But if we're spraying a water-based spray droplet that lands on a waxy, oily leaf surface, we know water and oil don't get along. And that's where having the right adjuvants, whether it's the water conditioning part of a Class Act adjuvant or the interlock adjuvant to get more spray down the canopy, having the right crop oils or methylated seed oils like Destiny or Superb to help melt through that wax and actually get the spray droplet into the plant is, in my opinion, absolute bar none. The hardest part about killing a weed is how do you get that water-based spray droplet to cross that waxy, oily leaf surface and actually get into the plant, which then allows the herbicide to do the killing. But if you can't get that water-based spray droplet into the leaf, that's a big problem.
Are those products that you just talked about readily available?
Correct. Yep. I'm sorry if I had to put my sales pitch in there. I wanted to mention them. Those are Winfield Adjuvant products, Class Act, Interlock, Superb, Destiny. You go to any co-op in Minnesota and they'll sell them.
This Minnesota corn crop, Mark, I guess no news is good news. We really haven't talked about corn at all, and it's been a fantastic start to the growing season for the most part. But if there are problems out there, what would they be?
Right. I'm going to get labeled as the doom and gloom guy when I tell you this, but I walked a lot of fields last week, corn and beans, and I'm always looking for the problems and the bad stuff, because that's my job as a technical agronomist. But what I noticed was that fields that were planted on the very early side, so guys that started on April 11th, insurance date, maybe a few days earlier, from April 11th up to April 15th, those are the fields, and it's not every field in that planting window, but fields that were planted in that window, I can find instances where most of the corn is up and at the 2 or maybe pushing the 3 leaf stage, but you'll see a foot, 1 foot gaps out in the field, and you dig up the gap and you'll find a kernel, a dead seed that's never did sprout. It's just sitting at 2 inches in still pretty cool soil last week, and never germed, never sprouted. And I would say of all the fields that I walked in west central Minnesota last week that were planted between April 11th and the April 15th, you know, maybe 30% of those fields had a 10 to 15% stand reduction just because of the kernels never sprouted, which I would presume was is due to either the cold shock or the cold water imbibition or just sitting in the ground for over 3 weeks with cold temps and not being able to germinate.
And we're talking about southwest Minnesota here, correct?
More west central. This was more in the Morris, Benson, Murdoch, Holloway area.
Was it wetter or cooler there, really? I'm thinking about southeast and east central Minnesota where there was more rain through the spring, but yep. How about for the regions on the western side of the state and how the weather might have acted differently?
Yep, and I think what I can tell you, my counterpart, the Winfield agronomist in southeast Minnesota that covers kind of Mankato, Owatonna, Rochester, he's seeing very similar principles or similar results. He showed me some pictures and showed me some stand count data that's consistent. But what I think hurt us in western Minnesota is that even though we were very dry, there was a lot of frost in the ground that took a long time for all that frost to come out. And I remember a lot of growers saying that third week in April, where temperatures were very warm, soils were dry, they were working up nice, but they were very light and fluffy and just very soft and loamy. And if guys worked their ground and let it sit for a day before they planted it, that was enough to kind of aerate the soil, get some warmth in there, allow the frost to come out. And then guys were getting planters stuck on just bone dry soil because the frost was coming out and just made it sink and there's no bottom. But to that point, the reason what I think might have led to some of the reduced stands in corn, which I don't want to over-exaggerate. It's not terrible. It's not the end of the world, but it's not perfect stands. But I think, as the frost slowly came out all spring, that just kept their soils very, very cool. Maybe they got up to 50, 52 degrees during the day, cool off to upper 40s at night, and we were always hanging right around that 50-degree temp for several weeks. And even though, yes, corn does germinate at 50, ideally it's nice to get some 60-degree temps shortly thereafter to keep it coming up and going. But I think hanging out at 50 or slightly below for too long is kind of hurt some of our germ on our corn.
We've talked about diseases. We've talked about weeds. We have not talked about insects. Do we need to?
Yeah, so I guess there's a bright spot there. I can't say that I've come across any severe insect pressure with a lot of the seed treatments on the corn and a lot of our soybeans now. That does a good job controlling early season insects, the wireworm, seed corn maggots. I can't say as I've seen any issues with that. Not saying they're not out there, but all the fields I walked last week, I did not see any insect issues.
What's the schedule for the answer plots look like throughout the growing season, Mark? How often do you have visitors?
Yep, so we do, we usually try to have at each location at least one, if not two, or some have 3 sessions throughout the summer. So this year in June, we've got 4 answer plot locations in central Minnesota where we'll have training events. July, we've got 3 sessions, and then each of August and September, we've got 4 sessions in those months as well. So if you're interested in coming to an answer plot, and kind of basically everything I've talked about in this interview is exactly what we cover at an answer plot, I feel the best part about my job is that I'm not just giving a sales pitch on a certain hybrid or a product and how it's the best thing since sliced bread, but I get to bring growers out into our plots, and I make growers dig up plants. We look at root systems. We evaluate if there is rootworm feeding later in the summer. We cut open stalks and look for diseases to see, did the seed treatment on soybeans prevent this disease from infecting my plant? So it's a lot of hands-on show-and-tell type of learning. And if growers are interested in coming, if they go to the website, our website is simply answerplot.com. We have a list of all our answer plot locations and the dates and the start times of when the training is. And that was at AnswerPlot, www.answerplot.com.